You know, but the past several weeks, we've been looking at miracles and miracles that Jesus performed, and because we're expecting miracles, right? And John 14, 12 says, I tell you the truth, anyone who believes in me will do the same works I have done and even greater works because I'm going to be with the Father. Now, if we're going to believe for miracles and if we're going to believe what the Word says there, then we need to know what he did so that we know if we're doing greater, right? We started in Matthew chapter 8 and we moved through the miracles of Matthew chapter 8 and we looked at we talked about shedding the beggar's cloak, and we've talked about last week looked at feeding of the 5,000, and this week we're going to look at a miracle that was recorded in Matthew, Mark, and John. A lot of times, and we talked about this last week, was the first one we looked at that John recorded because he's pretty picky about what he records, Luke is the only one that doesn't record this, and sometimes I wonder if maybe he didn't record it because he couldn't explain it. Because he was a doctor, and he liked to be able to explain exactly what it was, and I wonder if that's why he didn't record it. And this morning, the miracle that we're going to look at defies more laws of science than any other miracle, I think, in the Bible. Matthew chapter 14 is where we're going to be, verse 22. It says, immediately after this, Jesus insisted that his disciples get back into the boat and cross to the other side of the lake while he sent the people home. This is right after feeding of the 5,000. After sending them home, he went up into the hills by himself to pray. Night fell while he was alone. Meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble far away from land, for a strong wind had risen. And they were fighting heavy waves. About 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came toward them walking on the water. And when the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were terrified. In their fear, they cried out, "It's a ghost." But Jesus spoke to them at once. "Don't be afraid," he said. "Take courage. I am here." Then Peter called to him, "Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you walking on the water." "Yes, come," Jesus said. So Peter went over the side of the boat and walked on the water toward Jesus. But when he saw the strong winds and waves, he was terrified and began to sink. "Save me, Lord," he shouted. And Jesus immediately reached out and grabbed him, and he said, "You have so little faith. Why did you doubt me?" When they climbed back into the boat, the wind stopped, and the disciples worshipped him. "You really are the Son of God," they exclaimed. After that, they crossed the lake, and they landed at Gennesaret. When the people recognized Jesus, the news of his arrival spread quickly throughout the whole region, and soon people were bringing all their sick to him to be healed. They begged him to let the sick touch at least the fringe of his robe, and all who touched him were healed. This is it's the first one anyways that we've gotten to that Matthew described, and he described more than anyone else. Most of the time, Matthew is cut and dry. He tells it, this is what happened, that's it, it's over. But this time, he's the only one that records that Peter also went out on the water. He finally found something he wanted to talk about. It surprises me a little bit that John didn't have a twist on it and make fun of Peter for sinking. Because if you read John much, anytime he talks about Peter, it's to poke fun. John's account, though, of the same story, he just talks about Jesus. And in chapter 6, verse 16, it says, that evening, Jesus' disciples went down to the shore to wait for him. But as darkness fell, Jesus still hadn't come back. And they got into the boat and headed across the lake. Soon a gale swept upon them, and the sea grew very rough. And they rowed 3 or 4 miles, and then suddenly they saw Jesus walking on the water toward them. They were terrified, but he called out to them, "Don't be afraid, I am here." And they were eager to let him in the boat, and immediately they arrived at their destination. If you don't read any other account and you just read this account, it reads like this. The disciples got there and it was dark and Jesus wasn't there, and they decided, "He ain't here, we told him to be here at dark, we're leaving him." All right? That's the way I read it. "We told you to be here at dark, and you're not, we're gone. See you later. Figure it out." But in Matthew's account, we see that Jesus told them to go. So he went up on the hill to pray, to have time alone. In verse 24, he's up there praying, and he's all alone. He's by himself. And then it's like you're watching a TV show, and it's like, meanwhile, back at the ranch. Verse 24 says, meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble far away from land, for a strong wind had risen and they were fighting heavy waves. John says the disciples had been rowing 3 or 4 miles out from the shore. And here comes Jesus strolling by at 3 o'clock in the morning. Now listen, these guys have either just been woken up by a storm or not gone to sleep yet. And it's 3 in the morning, and I'm sure for a few moments, maybe even a few minutes, they're saying to themselves, that's not really what I'm seeing. What is that? What's making it look like that? What's going on here? They're rubbing their eyes. And a lot of times when we read this story, we think about Jesus walking on water, and in our minds, we're like, he wasn't walking very long on the water, right? He was just crossing a little puddle, and he wasn't on the water very long at all. But the average person walks 3 miles per hour. The average person. I know some that walk much slower than that. I know some that walk faster than that. But the average is 3 miles an hour. They're 3.5 to 4 miles out away from the bank. He's been walking on water for an hour before they ever see him. What's going on here? Now, the density of water is 1 gram per centimeter to the third power at 4 degrees Celsius, which simply means humans sink in water. Now, if you could run 67 miles per hour, you could actually run on water. But the fastest recorded foot speed is 27.79 miles per hour by Usain Bolt. Reaching 67 miles per hour would require 15 times more energy than the human body is capable of expending. And here Jesus is just strolling. He's not running. He's just walking. And walking on water is beyond our capabilities of explanation. We have a natural tendency to explain away what we can't explain. That didn't really happen. That's not true. That's made up. That's a hoax. And we explain away what we can't explain. We don't understand it, so we explain it away. It's just another government conspiracy. And we do this, and it's our natural tendency to explain it away. And because of this, when we can't explain the miracle, we miss the miracle. When we say you have to see it to believe it, it's true. But the opposite is even more true. That you have to believe it in order to see it. When it comes to miracles, we don't have a cognitive category for the supernatural. You don't know what to do with that. And your logical brain can't calculate it. And that's why the disciples didn't recognize Jesus, because that can't be. It can't be. No one can walk on water. What we're seeing is not real. And so the reason that they cried out the way that they did, that it was a ghost, is because they were trying to rationalize it in their mind. They don't have a memory to process it. It's impossible, so it must not be real. Must be a ghost. That's where they went. It's got to be. So we try to figure out how he did this, right? Because we don't have a memory. We can't comprehend it either. We're looking at it going, this can't happen. And scholars have been looking at this passage and going, how did this happen? It can't happen. And so they've tried to explain it away. So there are theories. There are theories that are out there. You can look this up. That every 1,000 years or so, ice caps form on the Sea of Galilee. And it so happened that they happened this night, and he was floating on an ice cap. Surfing, whatever. Now, I don't know what's more impressive, the fact that he surfed on ice or that he walked on water. Either one is a miracle, right? I mean, have you tried walking on ice, much less standing on moving ice? And at just the right time, an ice cap passed the boat and Peter stepped down on that ice cap too. It's a miracle. I mean, I tried to walk across ice that wasn't moving and fell and busted it. I can't imagine if it was moving. It doesn't make sense. We can't explain it. Seven generations of Wallandas have performed jaw-dropping feats of balancing. They've walked tight ropes over all kinds of things, from Niagara Falls, between skyscrapers. And one of the ones that they did recently, not really, it's been a while ago, but was the Grand Canyon. Nick Wallanda crossed the Grand Canyon on a 2-inch tightrope, 1,500 feet above the canyon floor with no safety net, because his grandfather impressed upon him at an early age that safety nets give a false sense of security. One of the secrets of experiencing the miraculous is if you want to walk on water, you got to get out of the boat, right? The boat is the safety net. As long as you're in the boat, you can't sink, right? As long as you're in the boat, you're safe. But getting out of the boat, you've got no safety net. Jesus becomes our safety net at that point. Many call Nick a daredevil, and it seems like an obvious understatement. After all, he stands on the shoulders of his family. He does human pyramids on high wires. But he doesn't get that daring strength from his DNA, but from the water walker himself. Before and after crossing the Grand Canyon, the cameras and all the people watching him heard him pray and praise Jesus. Daredevil can have a negative connotation, but it's more than frivolously risking life and limb or reckless for no good reason. It means to dare the devil, and as such, it should be a defining characteristic of anyone who follows the one who went 40 rounds with the devil in the desert. Fearlessness is one of the most overlooked characteristics of Jesus. Think about some of the things he did. Think about the things that we've already looked at that he did. He defied the religious leaders. He goes toe-to-toe with Legion, named after the Roman military force that would have up to 6,000 men in it. So there's hundreds of thousands of demons in this guy. Chains couldn't hold him. He was crazy. And I know one thing, you don't mess with crazy because you don't know what they're going to do. And Jesus faced him head on. 6,000 to 1, so to speak. And Jesus beat those odds. And a herd of pigs picked up the demons and drowned. 1 John 4:18 says, "There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out all fear." Love is fearless. Love is daring. It makes you stand firm in your faith regardless of your circumstances. If you have a holy fear of God, then there's nothing else to fear, including the devil. He can't make a stake on your life or get a foothold without you allowing him. He can't violate your free will. There are several thousand classified fears and phobias, but we're only born with two innate fears, the fear of falling and the fear of loud noises. All other fears are learned fears, which means all other fears can be unlearned. But the key to unlearning is a revelation of God's love. That's how your fears fade away. The will of God is not an insurance plan. It's a daring plan. You're not commissioned to hold the fort until Jesus returns. He commands us to invade enemy territory and reclaim it for righteousness. Jesus didn't suffer brutal death on the cross just to keep us safe and sound. Jesus died to make us dangerous. He died to make us daredevils. Think about the waters were rough and the winds are blowing. It wasn't like it was smooth sailing. It was white capping. And here he is walking on the water. In 1992, the Sea of Galilee had a storm, that there were 10-foot tall recorded waves. Maybe they were that tall that day. Well, it doesn't matter how tall they were, it scared Peter. It wasn't calm waters, and Jesus was walking on it. I mean, there's waves tossing the ship around. I can see him like he's walking. Oh, what is that? I just see there's something bobbing out there because he was going over a wave and back down and over. And then they see it more, and they're like, what? That can't be Jesus because you can't walk on water. It's got to be a ghost. Disciples were at the end of their rope. They were at the end of themselves. But that's when they're getting close to the miracle. The same can be said for us. When we're at the end of our ropes, we got nowhere else to turn. We're getting close to the miracle. They had rowed 3 or 4 miles out. They weren't firmly on the shore. They were in the middle of the fight, so to speak. Miracles don't often happen with the ground is firm beneath your feet. We all want to see miracles. We all do, right? We just don't want to be in the situation that causes us to need a miracle. Most miracles don't happen while inside of the shoreline. You have to row out to sea. You have to venture into uncharted waters. You have to step into the unknown, so to speak. See, if you're firmly planted on the shore or in the boat, for that matter, if we're afraid to take a leap of faith, we will never experience the miracles God has for us. Sometimes it's just about being obedient by stepping out on the limb. Sometimes it's about a fearless trip to sea. Otis Elevators is one of the most sold elevator in the world, but prior to 1854, he couldn't sell his elevators until he changed his sales pitch. In 1854, at the Crystal Palace exhibit, standing on top of a platform governed by his newly installed braking system, he ordered the axemen to cut the cable. It was a stunt not only to prove that his braking system worked. He fell. He started free falling until the braking system brought him to a halt. And when they saw it work, his sales skyrocketed. When it comes to body armor, there's no margin for error. So this demonstrates effectiveness. They sell their product by shooting a willing volunteer who is wearing it. I don't know that I want to be that volunteer, right? At least not the first one. Faith is pulling the trigger and believing that your body armor will stop the bullet. Faith is cutting the cable and believing that the braking system will stop your fall. Faith is getting out of the boat and believing the water will hold your weight. Years ago, missionaries going to Africa, they would pack their belongings, not in suitcases, in coffins. Because they bought one-way tickets because they didn't expect to come home. They had no safety nets, no guarantees, only faith that Jesus had called them. And that's what it means to step out of the boat. No turning back. No fear, just faith that God will meet you on the water. I heard it said once that, and it's always been one of my favorite demonstrations of faith, is faith is climbing out on a limb and cutting it off and watching the tree fall. That's what it is. In Matthew, Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water. In verse 27, it says, "But Jesus spoke to them at once. 'Don't be afraid,' he said. 'Take courage, I'm here.' And then Peter called out to him, 'Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you,' walking on the water. And Jesus said, 'Come.' So Peter went over the side of the boat and walked on the water toward Jesus." Now I see this playing out in my mind. Jesus is like, "Don't be afraid, guys, it's me." And everyone's like, "It's not really him, it's a ghost. Tell him if it's really him that we can come out on the water with him." And they're like, "No," they're drawing straws of who's got to say it. Peter gets the short straw. But Peter did not expect Jesus to say, "Come on out here, buddy." There's no way in my mind that I'm thinking about this and I'm saying, yeah, Peter expected Jesus to say, "Yeah, come on out here." With all the other things that you see Peter do and struggle with throughout the scripture, there is no way that he thought that was going to happen. But he's the one that got picked. I mean, he gets picked on all the time by all the other disciples. If you read, you see it. And John really makes fun of him. Sinking on the water. I am so surprised that this story of him sinking on the water, John didn't find a punchline for that in the book of John. I'm just really surprised. Maybe it was because it was a good feat for Peter. But he gets a bad rap, right? He denies Christ, but he was the only one close enough to do so. They give him a bad rap for cutting off the ear of the man. John was the one who pointed it out that it was him. But maybe he was the only one willing to fight. At the end of the day, Peter is the one who stood up on the day of Pentecost and declared the gospel and saw 3,000 people come to know Christ that day. In the 50s, Charles Blowden stretched a tightrope across Niagara Falls, and crowds came to watch him cross it, and he walked out across with no net, pushing a wheelbarrow, even blindfolded. And one day he asked the crowd, "Do you believe I can push a man across in this wheelbarrow?" And everyone shouted yes. And then he asked, "Who will get in?" And there was silence. Everyone believed in theory, but no one put their faith into action. And Peter may have sunk, but at least he got in the wheelbarrow. He stepped out. Everyone said, "Yeah, let's do it." But Peter was the only one that said, "Okay, let's go." I feel like that story is pretty close to here, right? Everyone wanted to see it done, but no one wanted to be volunteering to do it. Nobody wants to be first. Something like this, nobody wants to be first. You go and jump off cliffs, no one wants to be the first one off. We want to see somebody else go first. Maybe you are that person who does go first. I want to see someone else make it first. Then I'm good. Peter took a leap of faith when he stepped out of the boat and he got in the wheelbarrow. And in fact, he did walk on water, even if only for a moment. The thing is he experienced the miracle because he didn't allow fear to hold him. The men in the boat all had the opportunity to walk, but only one got out. John 19 says, 6:19 says, they were terrified, but he called out to them, "Don't be afraid, I'm here." And then they were all eager to let him in the boat. And then when he got in, they immediately got to the other side. They go from scared to excited in a matter of moments. They are terrified of the walking ghost on the water until they realize it's Jesus. But the thing he says was, "Don't be afraid." Fear keeps us from more miracles than any other thing. The scripture says we have not because we ask not. And many times fear keeps us from even asking the question. To see the miracle, fear tells us it's not possible, that we have asked before with no results. Fear says it'll never happen. Fear kicks us into overanalyzing, logical thinking, and it keeps us from moving. Fear says we aren't healed, that the miracles really didn't happen. Fear will keep us from the miraculous. Fear will keep us from taking a step. There have been opportunities that I've missed because I was too afraid to even ask. There are things and opportunities and things that I've seen go by me because I never ask to be a part of it. Or I never even checked it out to see if it was possible. Because that's for those people, not for me. When Jesus told Peter to come, he could have stayed in the boat. He could have allowed fear to keep him tied down to the boat. But instead, he took a step of faith. How often do we ask Jesus? Do we ask the Holy Spirit? Do we ask Him to do something in our lives? And He says, "Okay." And we're like, "Ah, He didn't say that." And we don't take the first step. And so we miss the miracle because we're like, it's not for us. It's too hard to take that first step. It's too hard to jump out there. But Peter squashed all fears and he walked on water. Corrie Ten Boom, who helped hide Jews during World War II, once said, "Worry does not empty tomorrow of its sorrow. It empties today of its strength." She and her family risked their lives daily, never knowing if Gestapo would knock. She admitted that she felt fear often, but she also said God's presence gave her courage to act anyway. Fear knocked, but faith answered. What door are you opening today? What knock are you going to open? Is it the knock of fear or is it the knock of faith? Which one? I challenge you today to squash fear and walk on water. What's the one thing that you wish could happen, but fear has kept you from even asking or acting? And it could be anything. It doesn't have to be a spiritual thing here. What is it? Ask everyone in the wood to stand to your feet. Lord, I thank you for today. I thank you for showing us that it can happen. Because if Peter can do it, then I can do it. Lord, I just pray in this house today. I pray today that you begin to give, faith where fear resided. Lord, that today that we shake off fear and we walk in faith. Help us to answer the knock of faith, not the knock of fear. Maybe you're in here today and there's a situation in your life that you've allowed fear to control and manipulate. And you say, "I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want fear to control this aspect or area of my life any longer. I need faith to push past this." I want to invite you to come. I want to pray with you. It doesn't have to be something spiritual. It could be something just in your life that you've not done or that you've wanted to do. And you've allowed fear, though, to keep you from taking the step. Maybe you did step out. Things happened and the storm came and you kind of looked around at the waves and you got scared. And instead of calling out, you hid away. And you say, "I need to take that boldness back. I want to invite you to come." Lord, I just thank you today. Thank you for the ones that are here. Lord, I know that there are more people that need to be here this morning that are facing situations and circumstances that they need a miracle, that they need you to step into. And Lord, I pray that you begin to move on them even now, God. If you feel led to come and pray around this altar, feel free to do so. If you need a miracle, we want to pray with you. I encourage you to move this morning.